I'm your host, Mark Shea. And as the blaring sound of Ludwig von Beethoven makes clear, we are here for another hour of Connecting the Dots here on Breadbox Media. It's Thursday today. We're here in Seattle. We are heading into Stormpocalypse weekend in the true Windy City. Out there in the other Windy City is my co-host, Mr. Doug O'Brien. How you doing, Doug?
I'm doing great, Mark. How are you?
Cool. We're just getting ready for the gigantic, epic windstorm that's bearing down on Seattle as we speak. So we're supposed to get winds up to 75 miles an hour here. So
that's incredible, actually, for you guys.
Actually, it's not a common phenomenon here, but it is a normal phenomenon. At some point during the winter, we'll get winter windstorms. We in the past, we've tended to get them on, and we're actually pretty close to it. We tend to get them on name days. So there was, in 1962, there was the Columbus Day storm, which is before they had satellite technology and could predict these things. And it just like appeared out of nowhere. It was this gigantic, epic hurricane force windstorm that hit us. And everybody who was alive then remembers it. And there was one in 1993 on inaugural day that knocked out power. It knocked our power out for 3 days. In some parts of Western Washington, it was out for 2 weeks. And so we get this. Yeah, just now and then for some reason. So there was some typhoon, I guess, in Asia or something, and it blew across the Pacific at hurricane force or something like this. And now it's making landfall on the west coast of Washington. And so we're getting rain here, and pretty soon we're going to get these gigantic winds that may very well deprive us of power, in which case I've already notified Breadbox Media that, you know, if you can't reach me for some reason, just put a podcast on and I'll see you next week.
Well, which is also a good reminder to keep people who experienced Hurricane Matthew in our prayers, because it's always the poor that suffer disproportionately when something like this happens, you know.
Sure.
A lot of people, when the power goes out, will find some alternative. But when you are barely making ends meet before a storm, when a storm comes, it can be totally devastating to families. And, you know, the situation in the Caribbean and Haiti and the Carolinas is just, it's still an ongoing tragedy.
Yeah, it really is. You know, and you can help those guys. There's organizations like Mercy Corps, for example, that are doing great work on the ground there. I'm sure that you probably know other organizations that are helping in Haiti, right?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, the Catholic Charity is doing a fantastic job, and so is Catholic Life Services. It's you know, almost 1,000 dead, and it's a country that really hasn't recovered from the earthquake. It's also sad, too. Some Haitian activists have encouraged people not to donate to the American Red Cross because of the less than stellar performance they had with the Haiti earthquake. And, you know, these are, you know, our brothers and sisters in Christ and people who already live in the poorest country in the hemisphere. And whatever people can do, at a minimum, obviously, at a minimum, pray for them and it's speedy recovery. But in so much as we can be the hands and feet of Christ and help with financial support, that's always a very good thing to do, especially for the very poorest of these folks.
Yeah. If you go to, by the way, if you go to Charity Navigator on Google, Charity Navigator is a great site. What they do is they evaluate charities so you're not getting screwed. Because there's a lot of, well, that's what they do, right?
That's their motto, so you don't get screwed, right?
You don't get screwed. Well, the thing is, you know, on the one hand, it's better to be generous, even if you get screwed. I mean, brownie points for you for being generous, and that's good. And if somebody screws you, oh, well. But the other thing, of course, the other side of it is that's money that could have gone to Haiti that is instead going to some charlatan.
Right, exactly.
And so what Charity Navigator does is you log on and you can just punch into their search box. You just put in Haiti, and they will point you to every really reputable charity that's helping Haiti right now. And so you can go, right. You know, pick one or give to all of them if you want.
And as someone who's very familiar, having run a food bank that was rated by Charity Navigator, one of the great things about them is that you get higher points by being transparent. What percentage of your revenue goes towards programs, I mean, actually helping people or doing what your mission is versus administrative costs. And it really is a very objective way to measure the impact of who you're donating to. So I totally agree with you wholeheartedly. Hello?
Yeah. So big fan of charity. We're having weird digital breakup things happening with your voice, so it's kind of hard to understand you sometimes. Hopefully that will get ironed out. It's probably just because we're all bouncing off satellites or something.
I should say, I'm actually not in Chicago. I'm in Des Moines at the Marriott. I'm here for World Food Prize, which is this week. And in honor of World Food Day, and again, staying on this kind of theme of the social teaching of the church, they're honoring scientists that have helped improve crops to help feed the world. So it's a good time, and that may be the problem. I apologize.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, the dinner is in honor of one of the greatest heroes who ever lived that nobody has ever heard of, named Norman Borlaug.
That's right.
Do you know the story about Norman Borlaug?
Who, me? Yes, I do. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. He was a professor at a plant. Yes.
For those who are not familiar with Norman Borlaug, it's arguable that Norman Borlaug is the greatest life-saving hero in the history of the world, and you've never heard of the guy. As far as heroes go, you know, he's not one of those guys that you would ever think of. He was, you know, raised out there in the heartland, married his childhood sweetheart, had a couple of kids, was an agricultural prof, and he saved the lives of a billion people, by the way. And the way he did it was bred strains of wheat so that they became incredibly abundant strains of wheat that just gave vastly more grain than wheat had hitherto done. And so about the time that he was doing his work, the late 60s, you had people like Paul Ehrlich writing The Population Bomb, in which he was declaring that the struggle to feed humanity was over. We were all going to die. There was going to be mass famine in the 1980s. Countries like India were going to explode in nuclear war and famine, and, you know, the people of Mexico were all going to die. And it was just give up. Let's all curl up in a ball. Meanwhile, Norman Borlaug was actually doing something. By the 1980s, both India and Mexico not only were feeding their people, but they were exporting grain because they had too much grain. They had more grain than they needed. And, all thanks to Norman Borlaug, who you never heard of.
Well, and he also inspired a whole generation of scientists, too, to not just wheat, but rice and corn, I mean, across the board. And again, what this conference is about and the honorees are about is to recognize that we can feed the world. There are challenges, you know, certainly with climate change, but we can feed the world. And why that matters in lots of ways beyond just feeding the hungry is that it does put to rest this whole issue of population control and some other similar issues that are canards.
Right. Yeah, and that's the thing is part of having a population is you wind up with more scientific geniuses.
Exactly.
You just let them be born, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And so one of my great heroes, and I particularly love that he's a hero that he seems to have been, you know, just a kind of a modest, ordinary guy just doing his job, you know, kind of that generation of men who just did their job and weren't, you know, whining and complaining, you know. So, you know, when Jesus tells the parable of the sheep and the goats, what's striking is that both the sheep and the goats don't know that they were serving Jesus when they were doing all those things. You know, well, Lord, when did we see you hungry and thirsty and naked and sick and in prison? They're all surprised.
Right.
And Jesus says, inasmuch as you did it to the least of these, you did it to me. If anybody stands a really good chance of hearing, come into the kingdom which my Father has prepared for you from the foundation of the world, because I was hungry and you gave me something to eat, it's Norman Borlaug. God bless his memory. We will be back right after this. You're listening to Connecting with God. Your host, Shane, here today. This is Michael Bryan. And we'll be back.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Mr. Doug O'Brien, although I'm not sure if we're actually here with Doug right now because there seems to be a bit of hinkiness with our phone connection. You there, Doug?
I am here.
Oh, but you're back. Okay. All right. We're struggling with the forces of technology today. And we will prevail, so that's good. Yeah. Oh, I'm tickled that you know who Norman Borlaug is. That's
Know, for me, he and George Washington Carver are just two great heroes that showed that these problems are solvable. If we work hard at them, we can solve these problems, and it can bring a whole lot of good to a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people don't remember. And that's probably good. In the early 19th century, there was a guy named Thomas Malthus.
Oh, yes.
Malthus was, if memory serves, he was a clergyman. You tend to get these guys, they tend to be very dutiful servants of the wealthy. The motto of the wealthy has always been, we need to call the herd of the weak and the poor. Better that the poor should die, as Ebenezer Scrooge says, if they'd be like to die, they'd better do it and help decrease the surplus population. And so exactly. Malthus was an English clergyman who said, human beings multiply faster than their food supply does, so poor people are just going to have to starve and die. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know,
he loved the Irish, by the way.
What's that?
He loved the Irish, I say sarcastically.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, and that was, you know, that was when famine struck Ireland, the rich in England basically said, oh, well, too bad, you know, and it's because you people are lazy and you breed too much.
Gosh,
we don't hear
right?
that.
Yeah.
Any... don't hear that anymore, do we?
No.
Just enough of me, way too much of you, is the motto of the wealthy toward the poor always. And so Malthus was constantly being quoted, by people whose approach to poverty was, if the poor bee liked to die, they had better do it, and help decrease the surplus population. Meanwhile, of course, the Christian tradition says, no, if the poor are hungry, you feed them, and you find ways to feed them, and it can be done. And Borlaug was, in our time, or at least in my youth and in your youth, was the guy who was the answer to Malthus, and said, no, you just find ways to produce more food. It's a big planet. You know, there's right. a lot of room. There's a great deal of dirt out there, you know, and you could plant stuff in it, you know, and that has been consistently the case, because we believe, as Catholics, we believe in providence. We believe that God will provide if we put our minds and backs to it. And look at what God has given us, we can figure out ways to feed people instead of just saying, oh, well, too bad for you. And you've been part of that. And I want to thank you for being part of that. You have yourself helped to run ministries that feed people. God bless you for it.
Well, thank you. But again, you know, like all of us, and yourself included, is that we're all animated, though, by goodwill that comes from our faith, right? That to help our needy neighbors is really to do what we're put here to do, right? And yeah. And I'll just say this. This has been a nice antidote to an otherwise ghastly week. Listening to people from literally around the globe, the scientists that were honored, you know, did everything from a female scientist from Africa who developed new strains of sweet potatoes that have high levels of vitamin A that help prevent a number of diseases that are common in West Africa. Things like that is a great antidote to an otherwise terribly abysmal week in the broader culture and in our political landscape.
Well, terribly abysmal in one way, but also hopeful, of course, in another. in
where?
He who shall not be named is, I mean, when I look at Nate Silver's 538 website, you know, Trump is just absolutely tanking in the polls. And so, I mean, it's admittedly, we're talking about Democrats here who have a genius for snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. And so there may still be some way that Hillary will figure out a way to lose. But at this point, it looks like Trump has effectively dynamited himself. And so that's the ray of light out of this. But, yeah, it's been pretty bleak, and it's been especially bleak. We were talking about this, Rod Bennett and I were talking about this on the show yesterday. It has been especially bleak to me watching pro-life Christians trying to figure out some way to say, vote sex predator or the baby gets it. Just stop, will you? Just shut up.
Right.
Stop saying that. You're helping nothing, you know. So, yeah. But back to happier things.
Right.
I'm really glad to hear that this dinner is happening, that a man like Norman Borlaug is being honored, and that the kind of revolution in breeding better strains of wheat and growing sweet potatoes that have more vitamin A, so people aren't going blind in Africa, is just a magnificent thing. So thanks be to God for that, and it's something that I think we can.
I'll give you about there's another group, again, the devout people of devout faith who have started a not-for-profit in North Carolina. They create a peanut butter paste, right, that when children are severely malnourished, those under age five, they, in a famine situation, mothers can't produce adequate amounts of breast milk. And so children under age five actually are at greater risk of premature death because of that. And they cannot... their bodies cannot take normal food or even baby food. But there's a peanut butter, I mentioned George Washington Carver earlier, is that there's a peanut butter paste that's fortified with non-fat dry milk and vitamins that's produced here, again, by it's very small not-for-profit people who are driven truly by their faith to produce this. You get peanut farmers in the Southeast that donate peanuts. You have dairy farmers. Right now, dairy is kind of tanking price-wise, and instead of dumping product, it's being donated. And they make this peanut butter paste that is distributed to severe malnourished Africa. And it's these little acts, right, that actually do transform the world. It's, you know, the Jews have this world tikkun, which is, you know, to help save the world. It's these acts of people putting their faith in action, whether it be Dr. Norman Borlaug or Carver or a scientist who has a degree in plant genetics, who then works to figure out a way to make sure that the population of Africa has sweet potato or that works on rice or corn in Mexico, whatever. It is very hopeful to have people put their goodwill and brains to work on these problems.
Yeah. And it's, you know, and it's amazing. What always keeps impressing me is just the sheer cleverness of people coming up with stuff. So I saw something, for example, somebody came up with this ridiculously simple idea, which is being put to use. I saw it being used in the shacks of poor people living in the Philippines. So you got people who are literally living in shacks that are just made of corrugated steel siding that's kind of hammered together, and they're just these dark, lightless boxes that people live in. And so somebody came up with this super simple idea. You take a 2-liter pop bottle, and you put a kind of a cowling around it. You cut a hole in the corrugated metal, and then you fill the bottle with water, and you shove it down through the hole, and it acts like a big light bulb. All the light from outside comes through the pop bottle and then diffuses into the room, and you've got a light bulb in the room. So you're not living in this dark hole anymore. And it's like, you know, you look at stuff like this and you think, why didn't I think of this like 100 years ago or whenever they invented, you know, these 2-liter plastic bottles? This is like so simple. Anyone could have thought of it. And it's just stuff like that. You know, they've invented some way of for places that don't have a good water table. Somebody's invented some gizmo that basically just sucks water out of the air. And it produces enough water to serve a village of people every day. Amazing, you know.
Amazing.
You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Mr. Doug O'Brien, and we will be back here on Breadbox Media right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
The Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today on this fine, fine Thursday afternoon talking about, we've been talking a bit about the great Norman Borlaug, who, if he was a Catholic, I think should be canonized, but I think he was like a Lutheran guy or something.
He was a Lutheran, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And anyway, during the break, though, you were mentioning Archbishop Chaput. published a piece. I have not read it. Could you talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, sure. He, the WikiLeaks have continued to release internal documents from John Podesta, who was Hillary Clinton's campaign manager. John is a longtime Democratic activist. I should say that I worked with him for a period of the 1990s, and I have a great deal of respect for him. And in these WikiLeaks emails, there have been a lot of banter and back and forth on a lot of issues, not least of which has been kind of some campaign strategies related to evangelicals and Catholics. And in one of those email strings, some dissenting Catholics and some non-Catholics are wishing doing machinations around how there should be a Catholic spring, et cetera, et cetera. Chaput's piece in First Things talks about a time in which he had a meeting with some political activists that were involved for Catholics for the Common Good or something along those lines. One of the groups mentioned it in that piece, and right. how they were pressing for more of the social justice agenda of the church as opposed to the life issues, et cetera. And that he right. never saw them again, and he wasn't really enamored of. And, he's not surprised, but he kind of ends the piece by, this is really an awful choice that we have. And right. and there really was no surprise there, except I think we can all agree there isn't equivalency, right? right? From dissenting Catholics wanting to pursue a liberal agenda both politically and in the church, it's just not surprising. But that's not the same thing as someone who is being accused of serially, if not assaulting, certainly harassing people. And, that's kind of the challenge we're having right now with all these revelations that, yeah. that frankly really are further debasing the political discourse. Just
yeah. And it is assault. It's not harassment. It's assault. When you grab a woman's crotch, that's assault.
I agree with that, but he'll claim that he didn't do that. He was just talking. And it's like, well...
And of course, in the last 24 hours, 10 women have come forward and saying, like, hell, you were just talking.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah, which we all know. And it's absolutely right. When someone says there are anti-Catholics on the left, my response is, this is a surprise to you?
Right.
You didn't think that was true? Of course there are, And yeah, they'd like nothing better than for the church to just stop talking about abortion and stop talking about homosexuality, stop talking about gay marriage, just stop it. And so that none of that shocked me, when they came out with those. What cracked me up was some of the things that Podesta was saying, not about the church. There were some things that were spoken about the church. So the church was described as backward,
primarily
this is. Yeah, this is and this all has to do with pelvic issues. It's always about abortion, gay marriage, divorce and remarriage. And those are the things that the dissenting left object to about the church's teaching. And everybody knows that. And we've all known that for 30 years, and that hasn't changed. And so that is to be opposed because the faith of the church really is at stake here. And the church is never going to back down on,
right.
on the morality of abortion. It's never going to back down on euthanasia. It's never going to back down on the ontological impossibility of gay marriage. At the same time, there are other things that they were saying. So, for example, Podesta at one point criticizes conservative Catholics for talking about subsidiarity. And Thomism. and Thomism, you know, but what he's making fun of there is not subsidiarity itself or Thomism itself. What he's really making fun of course, is the habit of saying things like subsidiarity means that I get to keep all my money and tell the state to go to hell, which I make fun of too, you know.
Right.
That's not Catholic teaching. That's a distortion of Catholic teaching. And so, you know, some of it I thought was like, it was either unsurprising stuff I already knew, or it was things where I was going, they're not wrong, actually, about this bit. You know?
And I'll say this too. I mean, when you think about the Catholics that are active in Hillary's campaign, for me, it is a call for greater catechesis, right? To explain these terms that are thrown about, why they matter. Wow. For me, it was more, you know, blatant ignorance, right, than anything else. And that does not become a pro forma argument for not backing someone. It becomes a stronger argument for better catechesis of what it means to be Catholic, you know, why we hold these truths, what they mean, and how they should affect us in the public square.
Exactly right. And the other thing, of course, that went with it was what I thought was hilarious. It was one of those, you know, I'm shocked to discover there's gambling going on here moments, you know, like from Casablanca, you know, when I'm listening to Trump supporters of all people saying there are anti-Catholics on the left. And I'm going, wait a minute. This is the guy who back in February was calling Pope Francis disgraceful.
Right.
This is the guy whose press flack, Katrina Pearson, is on record saying that Catholics, you know, are deluded to think that Jesus started the church. This is the guy that hired Steve Bannon, who is an alt-right racist, to attack the church and say that the only reason that the church cares about immigrants is because basically we need them to, you know, pump up our numbers and keep our tithes coming in and all that kind of stuff.
Which is also false, by the way. That's factually not correct.
Yeah, it's just a lie, you know. And Trump has just absolutely surrounded himself with people who, you know, Ann Coulter was saying, you know, of the Pope last year when he came to the U.S. that this is why the founders distrusted Catholics. She has said of illegal immigrants who are by and large Catholics that Trump's position on them. She loves it so much that he could perform abortions in the White House and she would cheer I mean, you're telling me that you're worried. And the thing is now what are we watching? You know, we saw this absolutely disgusting display this weekend of, you know, Trump's remarks about being a sex predator. And what have we seen from Catholic pro-life and evangelical pro-life leadership? We've seen almost nothing but defenses of this sect.
A doubling down, right?
Oh, doubling down. Yeah, this is he is, you know, Father Frank Pavone, I am shocked and sorry to say, called his quote unquote apology a display of moral courage. What do you say about something like that? You know, how do you respond to something like that? And we've seen almost nothing but defense. This is the way guys talk in locker rooms. The hell it is.
Right.
This is not the way men talk in locker rooms. You know, we see this kind of stuff. We see people, the same people who are supporting him, consistently attacking Pope Francis as, and I'm quoting here, you know, a Marxist, a communist, a homosexual, a heretic. Who is the sinister anti-Catholic fifth columnist here? I knew that, you know, I've known since forever that, you know, that leftists, of course, oppose the church on abortion, homosexual, and all the rest of it. And they've made no bones about that. But now we're hearing from people who for years have advertised themselves as the real Catholics, We are not cafeteria Catholics. People who disagree with us are Catholics in name only. And these are the people that are telling us, vote Trump or you're going to go to hell. You know, vote Trump or the baby gets it. Speaking of Archbishop Chaput, I've seen articles saying Archbishop Chaput is wrong and you have to vote for Trump. You know, who's arguing with the magisterium here?
It's like getting shot from behind, huh?
Yeah. So it's like, and my attitude is very simple. Just listen to the church. Stop fighting with the church. That's all you have to do. So just agree with the church on all of her teachings, not just on the pro-life bits. And you won't be inconsistent anymore. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. We're here today with Mr. Doug O'Brien, and we will be back on Breadbox Media and Connecting the Dots right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Mark Shea, and we are here today with Mr. Doug O'Brien. By the way, if you want to join the conversation, give us a call or text us at 1-573-4-BREAD-4, 1-573-4-BREAD-4. And we're talking a little bit about the shameful display, which it's going to take years, I think, for the for the Christian right and for the pro-life movement to wipe the stink off of their support for Trump through thick and thin. You know, the Shea's iron law of Trump support states that Trump will give you absolutely nothing of what you desire from him. He is not going to give you a thing, and he has not given you a thing in terms of actual support for the pro-life movement. The last word that we had from him was in April, saying that we should leave the laws as they are. He refused to mention abortion in his convention speech. The other night at the debate, when Hillary, who is, of course, her job is to gin up her base with fears and worries about, the great Republican assault on abortion rights that Trump is supposedly going to lead. And so she has to lie to her base that this is like a big thing. This is a real danger that they face, you know. So she warned that Trump was going to overturn Roe and all the rest of it. You know, when Trump's turn came, he didn't say a word about Roe. He talked about the Second Amendment. And he has refused to say a word about it.
And he pledges judges that, I mean, in the end, what the retreat now has on the Christian right has been, well, it's the judges. The problem is that the likelihood the Supreme Court will overturn Roe v. Wade because he appoints one or maybe two judges to the Supreme Court is so unbelievably unlikely it is a fantasy strategy.
It is absolutely a fantasy strategy. And in fact, what keeps being overlooked is that every single Supreme Court victory for abortion rights has been wrought by a Republican appointee-dominated Supreme Court. Roe was written by Harry Blackmun. You know, the Casey decision, Anthony Kennedy is the guy that writes the majority opinion. And this is, you know, over and over, this fantasy that Roe is going to go somewhere, it's just not happening. And it's not going to happen. And so you get this fantasy that Trump even cares about this stuff, which he does not. And people
Mark, look at it this way. In 50 years of public life, he has never taken a position that would be supported by the church on this issue. You know what I'm saying?
No, of course not. You know, yeah, absolutely so not. Sure.
And so he's had his road to Damascus experience? That's not believable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just not believable. And so what you get invariably is while Trump gives you nothing as a pro-lifer, you give him everything. You sacrifice the last shreds of your credibility to say that, maybe there is something to saying that Gold Star families are sympathetic to terrorists. Maybe, he wasn't insulting all POWs. He was just insulting John McCain. And over and over you get this kind of stuff. And now we have this incredible spectacle of pro-life people saying, women who read 50 Shades of Grey really have it coming if Trump grabs them by their private parts. It was just a joke. This is the way all men talk in locker rooms. Now, the wisest counsel I've heard from a woman on this, one woman on Facebook said, when some guy tells you that this is the way men normally talk, he is saying something very, very true about himself, and you should listen to him and, put 100 miles between you and that guy. I can tell you that it's not the way that all men talk, but go ahead.
The other thing for our Christian, for my Catholic friends who are still supporting Trump, even after all the most recent round of revelations, is that the scandal that this is causing to both their witness and to the broader witness of his public supporters, like Father Prevot, is that we rightfully are concerned about not to cause scandal to the church. And yet, there will be a day after this election, right, when likely Hillary Clinton will be president, and the folks that supported Trump through all this nonsense will have to deal with essentially the rebuilding of their reputations in the public square because they have so diminished it, the scandal they've caused. And I'd say also they've also caused great scandal to this nation. I don't buy into American messianism, but I do believe in American exceptionalism, and that what we do is we do try to project to be with many failures, but we still project to be a nation that tries to be a force for good around the globe. Like I said, I'm here in Des Moines, and these are good, decent folk that want to do good, decent things, and that has been the projection that we have had as a nation. And yet, again, being at a gathering of 1,000+ people from around the world here in Des Moines, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing that this is the best, this is one of the people we're putting forward to lead our nation. And I think for my Catholic friends that continue to support him, they need to recognize that they have caused great scandal to the church, to themselves, and to the nation.
Yeah. That's absolutely true. That's why it's I believe that it's so important for those of us who recognize the threat to the church's witness to not be silent. We can't just be quiet and hope that this goes away, because what people are seeing and hearing is Catholics and Christians saying things like, "Oh, this is just normal locker room talk." Women have it coming, and all this kind of stuff. It's just like, as I've said to a friend of mine, in the last week, the pro-life Christian establishment has done more damage to the pro-life witness and the Christian witness than 30 years of feminists attacking pro-lifers as being anti-woman and so on and the rest of it.
They when the pro-life movement says that it is pro-woman, right? We are pro-woman.
Yes.
And yet continues to back this guy? You have totally undone it.
Yeah. Just absolutely nuked their credibility. And so, you know, we have to be out there saying this, these people do not speak for me. And that's the appalling thing is, you know, I know many, many, of course, pro-life women out there who are just reeling, you know, because they really, and rightfully so, believe both in the dignity of women and in the dignity of unborn human life. They've been fighting the good fight for decades, just like you and I have. And what do they say now? How can they, who do they, how do they respond to a feminist, a pro-abortion feminist who says, Donald Trump represents you. When the pro-life leadership is saying, yes, he certainly does. He is morally courageous. Yeah.
That's just crazy talk, Mark. That's just crazy talk.
It's crazy talk. And it's just, it's driven by fear. You know, there's this kind of ridiculous, melodramatic fear that, you know, I've seen one writer named John Zmirak who's tried to tell us that Hillary is Diocletian and Trump is Constantine. And it's like,
oh, my gosh.
Get a grip, you know. This is ridiculous, you know. Sure, you know, I think, you know, Hillary is mildly hostile to the church on certainly on the pelvic issues and that kind of thing. We saw that and the people who surround her, there are those elements in the people who surround her. But for heaven's sakes, you know, she's not going to be herding us into concentration camps. And, you know, that's just not going to happen. And all of that kind of hysteria drives people with tremendous fear to say these ridiculous things in defense of the indefensible. And we're going to, you know, we're going to have that guy stink on us for years now.
We got a
tremendous amount of damage to undo. So thank you for fighting the good fight, Doug O'Brien. You are a light in the church. Well, we've come to the end of another hour. You've been listening to Connecting the Dots. Our co-host today was Mr. Doug O'Brien. Our producer was Alex Head and Jen the Jawa Longworth. And we will be back tomorrow with Reverend Mr. Stephen Gardonis. See you then. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.